The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Greetings, everyone. I'm Jennifer Green for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Teen Magazines. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from theteenmagazine.com, teenvogue.com, and kidspiritonline.com. Our first article today, from kidspiritonline.com, Mind on Music, How Music Affects the Human Brain. This article was written by Lily Wong and Isabel Zhang on January 14th. Life seems to go on without effort when I am filled with music. These delightful words by the English writer George Eliot capture the inexplicable joy we experience when we listen to music. Beyond a burst of happiness, music can evoke a plethora of other emotions, such as melancholy, nostalgia, calmness, anger, and even fear. Music can also affect us intellectually, altering our cognitive abilities in the short term. While the effects of music can be felt effortlessly, the science of music is far more complex. The elusive term music can be broken down into a combination of musical elements, such as pitch, rhythm, dynamics, timbre, texture, and form. Scientists have long studied these components in pursuit of a great mystery. How does music impact the human brain? While there is no clear answer, research has progressed enough to grant us an insightful and worthwhile discussion on this question. This article will look into the effects of music on the brain, examining the cognitive and emotional benefits of music, as well as how music can be used politically to influence public sentiment. The cognitive benefits of music were a long-standing myth for much of history. For example, during the early 1990s, there was a common belief that listening to Mozart could boost brain function, a phenomenon known as the Mozart effect. This popular perception was sparked by a 1993 study published in the journal Nature, which claimed that exposure to classical music could enhance spatial reasoning. The publication of the study led to a surge in parents playing Mozart for their children. By 1998, the enthusiasm had grown so pervasive that the U.S. Governor of Georgia at the time, Zell Miller, proposed state funding to distribute classical music CDs to newborns. The Mozart effect was also believed to extend to animal behavior as well, with some Mozart enthusiasts even claiming that it could improve animal husbandry. For example, psychologist Sergio Della Sala reported that a mozzarella farmer in Italy was playing Mozart to buffaloes to improve milk quality. The actual research on the Mozart effect presented a view far more nuanced than public opinion. Researchers Rauscher, Shaw, and Kai, who published their study in Nature, found that listening to a Mozart sonata for 10 minutes increased spatial reasoning temporarily. This is marked by a mean increase of spatial IQ scores of 8 and 9 points. However, these benefits did not extend beyond 10 to 15 minutes after listening. This intriguing finding led to further studies. Yet, no one could conclusively link long-term cognitive enhancements to listening to Mozart or any specific type of music. This resulted in the broader understanding that while music does influence cognitive function, the effects might be short-lived and not as universally applicable as once thought. This brings us to the current philosophy that the cognitive effects of music are not a one-size-fits-all phenomenon. According to Dr. Masha Godkin from National University, music activates both the left and right brain at the same time, and the activation of both hemispheres can maximize learning and improve memory. However, this effect varies widely among individuals, influenced by personal preferences, cultural background, and the specific task at hand. This variability suggests that the impact of music on cognition can be deeply personal and context-dependent, making it a highly complex field of study. Despite these challenges, listening to music can still be a great way to boost cognitive function if done correctly. For example, a specific kind of music can help increase focus and relaxation, promoting an ideal environment for studying. Music that contains unpredictable patterns and lacks a beat to which one can tap tends to be less distracting, making genres like classical, electric, lo-fi, jazz, and film soundtracks popular choices. Specifically, music with a tempo of around 60 to 70 beats per minute can induce a state of relaxed alertness, ideal for studying. Ultimately, the effectiveness of music in enhancing cognitive function during study sessions depends on how well the music aligns with the listener's personal study environment and their cognitive processes. The emotional impacts of music may be far more obvious and familiar to us. According to Dr. McCrary from UNSW, music involves the creation of an emotional connection between musicians, who create sound with an emotional intention, and listeners, who receive this emotional information. This dynamic interaction means that engaging with music can mirror the physical effects of exercise on the body, including similar activation patterns in the autonomic nervous system. Sometimes, the emotional response to music can be so intense that it induces physical sensations like chills, which are a result of dopamine release, a neurotransmitter associated with pleasure. Thus, listening to music is not merely an auditory experience, but an emotional exchange that can enhance our emotional well-being. Historically, music has played a significant role in shaping cultural identities and uniting people for common causes. From national anthems to protest songs, music can serve as a powerful tool for fostering solidarity and strengthening group bonds. This can be a positive force. It has been used extensively in various human rights movements and protests, such as From Little Things, Big Things Grow. Released in 1991 by Paul Kelly and Kev Carmody, this song represents the movement for land rights of the Gurindji people of Australia and has become an anthem for the broader movements of Indigenous equality and land rights in Australia. It is often performed at rallies and protests and is an example of how music can inspire, unite, and catalyze social change by fostering understanding and connection across diverse communities. However, music's uniting force can also be used for manipulation or as propaganda. As the Oxford Dictionary defines it, propaganda is information, especially of a biased or misleading nature, used to promote or publicize a particular political cause or point of view. It has been used throughout history, both in times of war and peace, to boost morale among soldiers, as well as to increase nationalist sentiment with civilians. In fact, propaganda has been used to inspire and influence the population. In times of unrest for thousands of years, with Virgil being commissioned by Emperor Augustus in 30 BC to write the Aeneid, an epic poem which glorified Rome's origins and justified Augustus's rule. One of the most upsetting examples of using propaganda to control nations of people is the Nazis' use of music in Germany during the Second World War. At the time, propaganda minister Joseph Goebbels stated, "Music affects the heart and emotions more than the intellect. Where then could the heart of a nation beat stronger than in the huge masses in which the heart of a nation has found its true home?" Throughout Hitler's regime, there were efforts to cleanse German culture of popular music by African American and Jewish musicians, which was viewed as incompatible with the Nazi ideology. During the Nazis' time in power, a propaganda song, Hurst Wessel Lied, the Hurst Wessel song, which depicted the marching of Nazi troops and the hope represented by the swastika, gained popularity and was made the national anthem of Germany in 1993. The anthem was then played at public events, rallies, and ceremonies, reinforcing the party's values and creating a sense of solidarity among German citizens. Through constant repetition and association with Nazi rituals, the song became ingrained in the psyche of the nation and served as a tool of both motivation and intimidation. In modern times, music's influence extends beyond traditional political and social spheres. On social media platforms, music is used to create viral trends and movements. Lip-syncing to songs has become an act of expression, allowing people to communicate their feelings or opinions in a way that transcends language. While this can be an empowering form of self-expression, it also raises questions about the commercialization of emotional content and the way certain musical trends can be manipulated to promote specific behaviors, products, or ideologies. Record labels, brands, and influencers frequently capitalize on music trends, using catchy songs and relatable lyrics to promote products or lifestyles. Coca-Cola has collaborated with many global stars to create music to promote their products, such as Taste the Feeling by Avicii and Colors by Jason Derulo. Such collaborations, music produced with the aim of advertisement and increasing Coca-Cola product sales, create a strong association between the brand, the song, and the artist. The omnipresence of branded music in online spaces sees the merging of art and advertisement, blurring the line between genuine emotional expression and strategic marketing by subtly embedding commercial messages within content that feels personal and relatable. Thus, music's influence extends far beyond simple enjoyment. When well harnessed, it has the power to enhance cognition and inspire personal growth, as well as bring communities together, both on a large scale, like uniting peoples in protest, and on a more personal scale, with young people bonding and uniting over their favorite pop stars and boy bands since the Beatles and earlier. But when listening to music, we should also be aware that it can be used to influence and manipulate public opinion, as well as promote specific behaviors, products, and ideologies without our best interests at heart. As more research is conducted on the field, the facts and statistics about music's effect on the brain may shift, but ultimately, music has been and always will be defined by the relationship between its makers and its listeners, a connection that brings joy, inspires change, and underscores the universal human experience. Our next article from TeenVogue.com, What Will Happen to Your Student Loans If Trump Closes the Department of Education? This article was written by Stephanie Hall on February 13th, and there is a note. This op-ed explains how dismantling the department could impact college students. The Trump administration has promised to eliminate the Department of Education, shifting more responsibility back to the states. States already have significant control over education, particularly when it comes to setting standards and deciding on curriculum. But eliminating the department would have major repercussions for college students. Setting aside the fact that Congress would have to approve the closure, doing so or otherwise dismantling the agency could disrupt programs and protections that millions of students and families rely on, including federal Pell Grants for low-income students, other key forms of financial aid, and campus civil rights protections. Students need to recognize this as a direct attack on their future. And these threats extend beyond education. They're part of Trump's broader push to undermine public institutions, redirect public funding to private schools that lack accountability, and upend American civil rights and protections. Ever since the Supreme Court handed down its 1954 Brown v. Board of Education decision, certain localities have resisted desegregation. Without strong oversight that federal funds and programs must be implemented legally and equitably, the limited social progress we've made could quickly be lost. If the administration moves forward with dismantling the Department of Education, students of all ages could face a more divided, unequal system that restricts opportunities instead of creating them. The civil servants who staff the Department of Education oversee programs that students rely on to pay for college, like Pell Grants, student loans, and work-study programs. The department also provides direct funding to colleges that enroll a number of low-income students, as well as historically black colleges and universities, HBCUs, tribal colleges and universities, and small schools with limited resources. Dismantling the department would put Pell Grants and other need-based aid programs at risk, which would disproportionately harm low-income students. In 2021, the Department of Education revived its enforcement office, which protects students who receive federal aid from being subjected to fraud and abuse. Without federal oversight, nefarious parties that stand to profit from the higher education industry, like the for-profit college industry, would operate with fewer consequences, leading to more students being saddled with useless degrees and high debts. Student loan borrowers have already faced mass confusion over the last 5 years, and eliminating the department could exacerbate existing issues. Federal student loan payments were paused to provide relief at the start of the pandemic in 2020, and legal challenges thwarted Biden administration's multiple efforts to provide additional debt relief. Conservatives have laid out plans to again privatize the student loan industry through legislation. Abolishing the department and moving student loans elsewhere could throw borrowers' accounts into further disarray and cause more financial harm. Regardless of where the student loan program ultimately lives, borrowers who count on Public Service Loan Forgiveness, PSLF, face an uncertain future. PSLF was dysfunctional for years, but recent improvements were finally moving the program closer to the way Congress intended, which is to provide debt relief to borrowers who work for a certain number of years in public service and make qualifying payments. It is unclear how the Trump administration will handle PSLF, though a plan to eliminate it was outlined in Project 2025. Eliminating PSLF would most severely impact the hopeful students seeking careers in education, healthcare, and government. PSLF help students who might otherwise be deterred because of high student loan debt to enter these important public service job sectors, allowing these industries to diversify their ranks to include more first-generation graduates. Beyond the massive amount of funding managed by Department of Education employees, they also play a key role in making sure students' civil rights are respected in places of learning. The department is tasked with investigating complaints of discrimination based on race, color, national origin, disability status, or age, as well as sex-based discrimination and harassment under Title IX. Title IX has been heavily politicized as debates over LGBTQ+ student rights, sexual misconduct policies, and gender equality have led to shifting regulations under different administrations. The Trump administration has signed an executive order banning transgender girls and women from participating in women's sports and has reinstated rules criticized for making it harder for students to report sexual violence. Title VI, which protects students against discrimination based on race, color, or national origin, has been equally politicized amid debates over race-conscious admissions, campus speech, and discrimination protections. The Trump administration is expected to weaponize Title VI enforcement to suppress certain topics and activities. Indeed, they've already begun executive orders that affect diversity, equity, and inclusion initiatives. Taken together, these orders could reduce students' protection against all form of discrimination and harassment. So, who stands to benefit from eliminating the Department of Education? Aside from the bad actors who have always lurked around our public education system hoping to make a profit, anyone who wants higher education to be an exclusive luxury would celebrate this regression. A college degree has long been seen as elitist because of who's had access from the beginning: white, wealthy families. However, for some people, a degree is necessary for overcoming racist, sexist barriers in the job market. To help more students reach higher education, advocates have chipped away at barriers to access, empowered by federal funding and expertise flowing from the Department of Education. If it is abolished, states with weaker higher education systems could struggle to fill the gaps, leading to a higher risk of disparities and segregation between well-funded and underfunded institutions and the students who attend them. In short, getting rid of the department could harm many and benefit a few. But for an administration seemingly determined to reverse the social and economic gains made over the past 60 years, maybe that's the point. Our next article from theteenmagazine.com: Water Crisis in Richmond, Virginia Rattles the City and Its Teens. This article was written by Campbell Vautrin on January 22nd. On January 6th, Richmond plunged into disarray. During the capital city's first snow day of the season, citizens enjoyed a relaxing day off until a power outage downtown disrupted the Richmond water plant. The outage jammed crucial water valves, and although the facility launched a secondary power system, it lasted only a few hours. Water flooded, further damaging the system and ultimately trashing the water pressure and levels in the Richmond, Henrico, and Chesterfield communities. By 10 a.m. on Monday, city officials had issued a notice for residents to begin conserving water, and by mid-afternoon, a boil water notice shocked the city with news that the water was no longer safe for use. Chaos ensued as restaurants and schools closed, sports games were labeled as inattendable, and water gallons flew off the shelves of supermarkets. In schools, meals were no longer made available, as well as bathrooms closing and water fountains being shut off. These necessities for a functioning building led to the closure of schools across both public and private districts. 6 long days passed before the water boil notice over the area was lifted. For nearly a week, residents were stripped of their ability to shower, wash clothes, cook food, or drink their tap water due to bacteria contaminating the water. Throughout this time, the leaders of the city made multiple promises of water being restored. Yet, every time, it was followed with a quick notice of a delay. After multiple rounds of testing, the advisories were finally lifted on Saturday, January 11th. My week surrounding the water crisis was hectic. On Monday, I was overjoyed with the snow day until, mid-morning, I received a frantic call from my mother instructing me to run to the nearest store and pick up as much water as possible. I was faced with chaos when I entered the store as Richmonders flooded the aisles and stripped the markets of leftover water. I managed to get a few bottles and returned home to another snow day on Tuesday. By Wednesday, most schools were closed. However, my school was not. I walked into school with the bathrooms, water fountains, and cafeteria closed. This continued for the rest of the week, as I was forced to shower at my nearby friends' houses and make meals using a minimal amount of dishes. In conclusion, the water crisis of last week showed Richmonders that their city lacked a common feature found in nearly all cities in the United States, a 48-hour backup power system. This lack of resource was the ultimate root problem. If the city was able to support the plant for 2 days using a backup power source, then the plant would have been able to immediately recover. We've run out of time for today's episode of Teen Magazines. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Jennifer Green, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Teen Magazines is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. We thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.